So today I'm going to read from the Bhagavad Gita as it is, chapter 6, Dhyana Yoga, text number 41. I'm just going to read the Sanskrit and then the translation and a very short purport. Prapya punya kritam lokan nushisva shasviti sama suchinam shimatam gehe yoga brashto pijayate. The unsuccessful yogi, after many, many years of enjoyment on the planets of the pious living entities, is born into a family of righteous people or into a family of rich aristocracy. Purport. The unsuccessful yogis are divided into two classes. One has fallen after very little progress, and one has fallen after long practice of yoga. The yogi who falls after a short period of practice goes to the higher planets where pious living entities are allowed to enter. After prolonged life there, one is sent back to this planet to take birth in the family of a righteous Brahmana, Vaishnava, or of aristocratic merchants. The real purpose of yoga practice is to achieve the highest perfection of Krishna consciousness, as explained in the last verse of this chapter. But those who do not persevere to such an extent and who fail because of material allurements are allowed by the grace of the Lord to make full utilization of their material propensities. And after that, they are given opportunities to live prosperous lives in righteous aristocratic families. Those who are born in such families may take advantage of the facilities and try to elevate themselves full Krishna consciousness. So again, the verse Prapya Punya Kritam Lokam Ushesva Shasviti Samak Sutrinam Shamate Kehe Yoga Brashto Vijayate. The unsuccessful yogi, after many, many years of enjoyment on the planets of the pious living entities, is born into a family of righteous people or into a family of rich aristocracy. In the first six chapters of Bhagavad Gita, it is said that the living entity is described as non-material spirit soul, capable of elevating himself by different kinds of yogas to self-realization. So we've gone through in the first six chapters, karma yoga, jnana yoga, and now we're in dhyana yoga. Now, Arjuna has actually stayed awake for all the six, hopefully, I think he did, for up to the sixth chapter, but he's getting a little concerned that Krishna is talking about how you're supposed to renounce your work and work dutifully, the results of your work, and how you're supposed to work dutifully in karma yoga, and how you're supposed to gain knowledge of the Supreme in jnana yoga, and how one should come to the platform of meditation in Sankhya Yoga. And Arjuna has already expressed doubts that the problem is our minds. We have a little problem with our mind. One person was telling Prabhupada, Prabhupada, but my mind, what can you do for my mind? And Prabhupada said, well, the only thing I can do for you is chant Hare Krishna. And I remember I was at one lecture that Prabhupada gave. And at the end of the lecture, this is in Buffalo in 1969, one person came up to Prabhupada and said, Swamiji, what's the difference between transcendental meditation and your movement? And Prabhupada said, we chant Hare Krishna. So the mind, Arjuna has said, is very difficult to control. As a matter of fact, at the third chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, even before this, Arjuna is saying, well, I know what I'm supposed to do. I know exactly what, but I don't do it anyhow. So that's the problem. We know what we're supposed to do, and we don't do it, so we feel guilty. Now, most people, they don't know what to do and what not to do, so they never feel guilty. Only the devotees are psychologically hung up because they know what they're supposed to do, but they don't do it all the time. So then they feel guilty. And then when they leave the Hare Krishna movement, when they really want to do what they're not supposed to do, then they feel even twice as guilty as everyone else. So they have to take twice as much as intoxication as an ordinary person to forget what they're supposed to do. So Arjuna is worried about that. Here I've taken to the process of yoga, and I've seen all my friends, they blooped. What's going to happen if I do the same thing? I remember when I first joined the movement, I was told that if anyone leaves the Hare Krishna movement, you should pray to them before you go to sleep. Pray for them. So then I do that. But after a while, if I kept on doing it, I didn't have any time to go to sleep. So I shortened my prayers a little bit. So Arjuna is wondering. Now, in the second chapter, Krishna said, Neha bikramanashosti pratyavayo navidite swapamapyasya dharmasya triyate mahatobaya. That on this path, there is no loss of diminution, and a little advancement can protect one from the greatest danger. So the greatest danger we've heard is to fall back into the lower species of life. Now here it's offering something positive, that if we take to the yoga process, then we can, even as the consolation prize, go to the heavenly planets for some time. And then when we fall back to the earth, we don't take birth in an ordinary place, we take birth amongst Brahmins or rich people, rich Vaishyas. Now considering that as an option, because I was told one time, Prabhupada said, unfortunately, many of my followers, they want to go to the heavenly planets. But that may not be as much as an option as we might think, because where is the Brahminical families we're going to take birth in? Where are the Vaishyas? Who's protecting cows? A Vaishya family doesn't mean someone who has some money in the bank. And even if that was true, Prabhupada said, in the only lecture he gave about this verse, he said that, generally speaking, when people take birth in rich families, they become even more degraded. They very often utilize that opportunity for sense gratification rather than for spiritual advancement. I mean, how many people do we know from rich families in our movement? Anyone here from a rich family? You can see Ananda after the class. Generally, people in rich families don't become attracted to the Hare Krishna movement. They think people join the Hare Krishna movement because they have no money. And therefore they have to go and beg, so they become Hare Krishnas because people feel sorry for them. And therefore they give them some money. Prabhupada said he knew of one householder. He didn't want, in India, he didn't want to work so hard. So during the day he put on the robes of a sannyasi and went begging door to door. And at night he came back and put on his the robes of grihastha for when he was with his family. That way he made his business by begging. So that type of hoping that we'll actually get go to the heavenly planets, enjoy there for some time. Of course, if we're there for too long, Kali Yuga, the golden age of Kali Yuga is only going to be for 10,000 years. And if you go to Indraloka and you stay there more than 10,000 years, you'll be in trouble. When you come back here, and there's no kirtan to greet you, but all these little pygmies. And you've come back just for the Sunday feast. And you happen to be at the main part of the menu. And everyone there is on a raw diet. So So that may not be as auspicious as we might hope it to be. If you went for a vacation in Croatia and you came back to Slovenia and everyone is little pygmies, hungry pygmies, it wouldn't be a very nice vacation in the islands in Croatia. Therefore, this is encouragement to Arjuna, but Krishna is not really trying to tell Arjuna that you shouldn't practice yoga with the idea of reaching perfection. As a matter of fact, as it says here, generally speaking, that opportunity to take birth again has some relationship to how serious one is. Generally in the Vedic culture, there was vanashram. And vanashram meant that people either they came up to the level of karmakanda by seriously following the principles of the shastra, they acted dutifully either as a shudra or as a vaishya. They protected cows, they protected the bull, they lived a very simple life without any kind of sinful activity. They didn't contaminate the water or the air by their occupation. They were in harmony with nature. And the Shudras, they more or less assisted all the higher classes. And therefore they themselves were requiring pious activity naturally. Although neither the Vaishyas or the Shudras were very learned, but they were dutiful in their activities. They followed the higher classes of people. And they worked in harmony with Krishna's plan. None of them had factories. None of them had slaughterhouses. None of them were involved in technology. They were all living very simple lives, like Nanda Maharaj and Mother Jasoda. They live there. So far in Vrindavan, there's no divorce. Nanda Maharaj and Jasoda Mayi have been living together eternally, happily. Sometimes they fight over Krishna a little bit, but Krishna is always the object of fighting. They've never engaged in any sinful activity. They've always been protecting the cows eternally and the bulls. They live quite simply by tilling the land and getting milk and other milk products. So this is Vaishya, Shudra, pious activities, and by such activities, even they go to the heavenly planets, they come back, again, in a Vaishya community, a real Vaishya community, where life is simple, and you can simply advance more in Krishna consciousness. Or if one is fortunate enough to have the association of learned personalities, sages, like Sarabhauma, Bhattacharya, others, personalities who are learned, Garga Muni, then if one is actually Gyani cultivating knowledge, like the four Kumaras, then if one takes birth again, one takes birth in a Brahminical family and progresses from a Jignasu to a Gyani, to a liberated soul. Or as the next verse will say, if one is fortunate enough to take to the process of devotional service, then one can continue on in the next lifetime in that process. So that's what we should hope for. That's what Pariksit Maharaj is praying for. He didn't pray, let me go to the heavenly planets. I'll be with the apsaras for a while in the gardens there and then come back. And hopefully, you know, I get birth in a rich family and I could have a good time again. Now he was praying, let me take birth amongst devotees again, especially in Kali Yuga, because it's very dangerous. Unless we take birth amongst the devotees, there's every opportunity to get entangled. Therefore, our only hope in this age is the chanting of Hare Krishna. Where most of us, we didn't take birth in Brahminical families. We didn't take birth in Vaishya families. Our parents probably weren't protecting the cow and bull. Nor were we living, we were, nowadays I think, as Kali Yuga progresses rapidly, The only time people see cows and bulls is on their when it's some game they're playing on their video game. And then you're probably not even protecting the cow and bull, even on the video game, they're not protecting it. They're not protecting anything. All they're doing is killing dragons in dungeons. That's the closest they get to a pious activity nowadays. Or maybe in the present video games, they're the dragon, and they're slaying the knight. Therefore, we can't hope that people, we took birth in a Brahminical or Vaishya family, and that by our pious activities we landed here. No, the only way we're here is because by the mercy of Srila Prabhupada, we were introduced to the chanting of the holy names. And along with the chanting of the holy names, there is prasadam, etc. So it's actually the chanting that will bring us back to the spiritual world. We can't expect that if I chant Hare Krishna, then I'm going to go to the heavenly planets automatically. We shouldn't even want to go to the heavenly planets. But even if we did, where are we going to wind up? As I said, where are the Brahminical families we're going to take birth in? Where are the Vaishya families we're going to take birth in? At least not in Sylvania. How many devotees protecting cows and bulls? Therefore, we have to learn how to chant Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Without offense, as it says that Aho Bhata Swapachoto Garyan Yet Jivagre Vartite Namatubhyam. That how wonderful it is that simply by chanting the holy name, even a swapacha, swa means a dog, and paka means cook, nicely cooked. So one who knows how to nicely cook dogs is called a swapacha. Here, of course, we don't usually cook dogs. But probably in Korea, they cook dogs very nicely. They know how to cook a dog. And also China, they know how to cook dogs. So there's a whole class, just I gave that example, that one lady was in Hong Kong and she had a very beautiful French poodle, a little French poodle, that she took to the barbershop, I guess the dog barbershop, I don't know what they call it. She had a manicure and a haircut, so she looked very elegant, her French poodle. Her first time in Hong Kong, and she went to a very nice Chinese restaurant. But there was a sign, no animals allowed inside the restaurant. So she didn't speak Chinese, and she gave her dog to the man who was opening the door and pointed to the door, to the dog, you know, please take care of my dog. So he didn't understand what she was talking about. She went in, she had her meal, and she had a special preparation that she enjoyed very much. She walked outside and asked the doorman for her dog. And the doorman pointed to his stomach. I remember I spent 6 months one year in the Philippines, which were famous people there eating dogs. No, there was absolutely no milk products there. For 6 months I didn't have, there was no cheese, there was no milk. All they ate was rice. And of course the devotees were vegetarians, so they didn't eat dogs. But Prabhupada said that the people he knew who ate dogs, they said they were actually quite nice, the meat. A little salty, but. In any case, there is a class of people called dog eaters, swapacha. They're not considered very high. And to take birth in such a family is not considered very auspicious. But if a swapacha can chant Hare Krishna offenselessly, then he's eligible to perform sacrifice. Not that he's a dog eater and he goes schnick schnick, ram ram ram, day 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 day, and then they hand him the ladle and the other paraphernalia to perform sacrifice. Because our sacrifices are not exactly what they're talking about when they say sacrifice. Here we throw some grain. We're lucky if we can light the fire. And then we throw the grains. Most of them don't land in the fire anyhow. Most of them land on the person who's doing the sacrifice. So that kind of sacrifice is not what they're talking about. These are the sacrifices by which you kill a horse, you perform the sacrifice, Ashvamedha or Gomedha, and you sacrifice the horse or the cow, and then by chanting mantras, you bring them back to life. Not that you slaughter the cow or the bull and you say, shnik, shnik, ram, ram, hey, it's still dead. Come back to life. It's a sacrifice. No one has to have transcendental potency to actually be able to effectively perform a Vedic sacrifice. So Aswapacha, if he actually chants the holy name offenselessly, he can actually perform a sacrifice. And in order to do that, it requires a great amount of penance and austerity. Bathe in all the holy places and perform all the different sacrifices and austerities, brahmachari for many lifetimes, etc., etc. Then one becomes qualified. So we don't have that qualification necessarily. We just have to try to chant the holy name. And in order to chant the holy name, of course, we're given a very special opportunity. By Srila Prabhupada's mercy, we have a program with the five most powerful activities for helping us chant the holy name. Namely, chanting the holy name, worshipping the deities, hearing Srimad Bhagavatam Bhagavad Gita, living in a holy place, and serving devotees. Now, most of us, especially during the lockdowns, we can't go to the holy dhams, and if they lock down again, we can't even go to the temple. But that doesn't mean we can't live in a holy place, and even if we don't have deities, if we just have a picture of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu or a picture of the Panchatattva, that picture is non-different from Krishna. Just as Krishna and his name are non-different, we may not realize that Krishna and his name are non-different, that holy name is Krishna himself, full of all beauty, all wealth, all fame, all knowledge, all renunciation, all strength, that Krishna is present when we're chanting his name. And of course, he probably is not going to reciprocate with our chanting by giving us automatically all wealth. It's not we say Hare Krishna and suddenly a pile of gold appears and, hey, that's pretty good. I think I'll finish my rounds today. Or suddenly we become the most beautiful person in the universe. Or anything. Krishna appears, but Krishna is appearing so we can wake up, that's all. So we can wake up to our spiritual identity because we don't need anything in this material world. All we need is to wake up and realize who we are and what our relation with Krishna is. And then we get all happiness eternally. So that's the only reason why Krishna is appearing in this age, not to give wealth or fame or beauty or anything, but to give us consciousness of him, to revive our loving relationship with him. In order to understand that, to convince us about the aim of Krishna consciousness, then Prabhupada has given us these books. They keep on telling us the same thing over and over again, that we're not the body, and Krishna is God, and we're supposed to be his loving servant. There's no formula there how to win money and influence people. As a matter of fact, if you join the Hare Krishna movement, you lose all your friends, and most of the time, we're discouraged from making too much money. Of course, many times the devotees say, well, I'm going to make a lot of money and then I'm going to give it to the Hare Krishna movement. The famous last words. Because to make a lot of money in Kali Yuga, either you have to be a really good businessman, which is rare, or a very good cheater, which is also pretty rare. But in any case, one should be careful not to, if one wants to make a lot of money for Krishna, then do it. Prabhupada used to encourage that. But don't forget the sadhana of chanting Hare Krishna, reading Srimad Bhagavatam, hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, Bhagavad Gita, worshipping the deities, and serving the devotees. Now we may say, well, I don't have so much association with devotees, there's not such opportunity. But if we're married, then we have our wife. We should serve our wife if she's a devotee. The wife should serve the husband. They should serve the children. That's also serving devotees. And if we have no wife or children, then at least we should offer prasadam to our dog. Some kind of service should be there to the devotee. And we should try to make the atmosphere spiritual by following the principles of devotional service and chanting Hare Krishna. And whoever we meet, we should try to help them become conscious of Krishna. That will make the atmosphere spiritual. And that way, we have an opportunity to perfect our chanting of Hare Krishna, so one day we'll chant Hare Krishna and we'll actually mean it. We'll actually request humbly, lovingly, Krishna, Srimati Radharani, to engage us in their devotional service. Whereas Prabhupada writes at the end of the fifth chapter, in the Pratisbhasa Sutra of the Bhagavad Gita, which is chapter 4, text number 9, that where it says, Janma karma chame divyam evam yoveti tatvata. That if we simply understand Krishna's birth and his activities, then we can actually go back to the spiritual world. We don't have to. That's all we have to do. We don't have to understand who's trying to take over the world and how they're going to do it. We don't have to understand anything. Besides, even if we understood it, it would probably be very dangerous. All we have to understand is Krishna, how he's taken his birth, and what he's doing in this material world, and what he does in the spiritual world. That's all. So Prabhupada writes in the purport there, if we simply say unto Krishna that you're the Supreme Personality of Godhead, one becomes liberated instantly and is eligible to go back to the spiritual world. So let's all repeat that. I'll say a couple of the words and you repeat, please. Krishna.
Krishna.
You are the Supreme Personality of Godhead.
You are the Supreme Personality of Godhead.
So now we should all be liberated and we should be eligible to go back to the spiritual world. What's the problem? Well, there's a few problems we don't have time to express. But one problem is that we don't really mean it. It's like taking initiation with your fingers crossed. How many principles? 4. Which are they? No meat, no fish, no eggs. That's 3, right? What's the 4th? Well, we should actually mean it, that Krishna, you're the Supreme Personality of Godhead, which means that we have to engage our energies in the Sankirtan movement. Because there's no other pious activity. There's nothing else to find out about in Kali Yuga. There's no knowledge we're going to acquire that's going to help liberate us from the material conception of life. Well, there's no other pious activity. There's only the chanting of the holy name and the spreading of Krishna consciousness. So if we do those activities either in the temple or at home or in the street, then we'll make progress and hopefully we won't wind up in the heavenly planets. If we have to take birth again, let it be in devotee families. So let us practice this so there can be devotee families. So when we take birth again, we'll have somewhere to take birth again. Let us do that in such a way as that we actually progress the movement, at least to where Prabhupada progressed the movement before he left. Prabhupada said that if we can make progress, then at least maintain what I've given you. So at least let us bring back Gurukul. Let us bring back the farm communities. Let us bring back the Harinams. Let us bring back devotional service into this world again, as it's supposed to be brought back, so that if we take birth again, we can go to Gurukul. It's a good investment for ourselves. So if we don't make it, at least if we have to take birth again, let us take birth in a farm community. Well, we don't have to, we weren't born with a smartphone in our hands. And the only thing we learn is how to play computer games. So let us make progress in what Prabhupada has given us, and therefore ensure our, guarantee our future in this world or in the next. So I'll stop there. Thank you. Hare Krishna. Any questions or comments? Actually, this is the first time I ever ended on time. 4:30 is the time. Okay. Someone has a question? Okay.
Thank you for inspiring lecture. I would just like to ask, how can we become more serious in our practice? So how can we avoid the danger of leaving the movement in some point to the greatest extent?
Well, I guess we have to, these five powerful processes can give us a higher taste of devotional ecstasy. So we have to practice them sincerely. The only reason why we can be allured to leave the movement is that we think that there's something else that will give us happiness. If we get happiness by this process of focusing our attention on Krishna and giving our love to Him, then the material existence or material pleasures won't seem so attractive to us. We, as the six Goswamis, they gave up their opulent positions in the material world. But they're able to do so because they got the higher taste of becoming conscious of Krishna. Otherwise, those others who've given up the allurements of material energy, but they didn't become conscious of Krishna, they fell back again to the material existence again. So, thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.